Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast, where we talk about things after weird things. Joining me is Brian Brushwood, as Hello. Usual.
Hi, but more importantly, Justin Robert Young is here.
Our special guest, Brian. You just jumped right into killed my intro, Brian.
Sorry.
Our special guest returning from several weeks of convention coverage for the BitTorrent News. Brian, I'm excited to hear what Justin has to say about this because Justin has been out covering news like a real adult dressed in a Charmander costume. And I want to know, how did this happen? How did you get approached? How did this, hesitant to call BitTorrent this mature but still a grown up organization by our standards, by sure, they reached out to you. They said, we want you. How did this happen?
Okay. So the genesis of all this is really the contender. I mean, there's kind of some other factors that built up to it, but we invented the contender and we wanted different ways that we could get out there and talk about it. So instead of, and this might have been to our detriment, necessarily just focusing on card game conventions and stuff like that, we wanted to do a little bit of non-traditional marketing and really go out, considering this was an election year, and bring it to people who liked politics to kind of sell it and give it our street cred there. And so we did the trips out to Des Moines, Iowa for the caucus and to Manchester, New Hampshire for the primary. They were very, very successful. But what happened afterward is that I wound up getting into a conversation with somebody through Daily Tech News Show. He's a reporter for the Tech Republic, Dan Patterson, who's an awesome and amazing dude. He knew that, also, as it turned out, simultaneously in Manchester, not but a few feet from where we were screwing around, there was a contingent from BitTorrent that was looking to do a proof of concept for a news network so they could both A, get money within BitTorrent, and B, get credentials for the Republican and Democratic conventions. So they did that. They found out that I was there, that I was interested, and that, especially on Daily Tech News Show, I had, opinions on at that point, it was just the tech of politics. I wind up getting hooked up with the vice president of media out there at BitTorrent. And since I'm local, comparatively, I'm in Oakland and he's in San Francisco, we wind up having a conversation together and it wound up just coming together like that. It was definitely a fun, it was a quick start sort of situation, but man, it was an absolute blast to get out there.
So I had no idea that, I guess I should be surprised that this came about because of the work you've been doing in the contender, where you've been out there promoting, you've been very, very public in doing that and pushing your name out there. It is certainly a testament to, you don't know where things will come at you. I once got years ago an offer of a 6-month cruise ship gig because somebody heard me on a radio show explaining why psychics were full of it. And it was the head of entertainment for one of the largest cruise lines who just, I'd pitched and pitched and pitched before to no response. And then he heard me on the radio and he's like, I like this guy. I agree with this guy. I'm going to give this guy 6 months worth of work.
Well, and that's one of those things where the real key for this to happen, you could point to previous relationships and all this stuff, but the real key is that you started doing something without getting paid. You just started doing politics, politics, politics. You just started doing, the contender with the intent of making it turn into something. And so often it's only after, like, that's the biggest difference to landing a gig. Like, there's zero chance I would have gotten Hacking the System move forward if I couldn't point to a body of work that was peripherally related, that would allow people to imagine, oh, this is what it's going to look like as a television show. And you being able to point to politics, politics, politics makes, I'm certain, all the difference in the world to landing that kind of gig.
Yeah, one of my favorite phrases, and I heard it from the television writer David Milch initially, but it's a very old phrase, is that miracles happen to the prepared. Yeah. And that the idea is that everywhere around you, there is the opportunity that you've always wanted. And it is just your ability to recognize it and hook into it that is the difference between you living the life that you want to live and you not. And wondering like, well, look, I mean, if I only had the break that this person had, then, you know, things would be a lot different for me. And so, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it sort of comes together is that at the end of it, you know, what, once I got the gig, we all got flown out, and this was a crew that had never worked together and all had very different skill sets. And everything that I'd worked on before, and specifically the internet kind of training that I had or experience that I had, rather, kind of felt, you know, it was the big driver, because at the end of the day, they're like trying to fill out the schedule, and they're like, all right, well, we want to do rolling gavel-to-gavel coverage of everything that happens at both conventions, so who do we use for it? And there was nobody else that felt comfortable or had the inclination to sit in front of a camera for 6 hours.
So how does that, I don't know how much it starts to feel like gossip or whatever, but like, how does that conversation go where you essentially stand up and say, I could talk forever, you know, like, give me a chance, coach.
I mean, I'm very aggressive about it. So, I mean, I don't know how it would have happened with other people, but for me, it was just like, they're like, yeah, now we got to fill all this other time. And I'm like, me? Okay, fine. So we're done with that. What other stuff do you have to fill? I just knew I could do it, though, also, is that the idea of looking at a chat room and keeping a thing going is not new to me.
I guess that goes back to again, the reason that this all happened is because you started practicing alone in your room to an internet, not having any idea how many people were ever going to look at it or whether it would be profitable or lead anything. You knew for a fact you could do it because you already had.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. And also it's like, you know, you there is something to be said about recognizing moments and recognizing like when it is time to really, you know, put your skills to work, and you always want to be grinding. You always want to be putting things out there. But, you know, I knew for me, I couldn't, it would be far less of an opportunity for me if I just went out and kind of was part of a team for BitTorrent, considering that there was no hierarchy there. Like there was nobody that I really had to leapfrog or, you know, become a part of their, like this largest part of it. It was all open field. So it's like, for me, if I go out there and I contribute, cool. That's great. Experience. I'll really like it. I think it was super fun.
It was amazing. A video, nobody saw it, but I just hear the sound of things crashing, and then I see the guilty expression of Andrew Main at that moment. That was amazing.
I keep a box of toys, like magic tricks and stuff, next to my desk. Excuse me, I gotta pick up my billiard ball, my coin purse. Please continue with your story. So sorry to interrupt you.
Well, so
what's this? A giant coin?
So okay, so you get out there, you get the gig, and it becomes clear that everybody's building this themselves. And number one, you know, there's some aspects to the coverage that were a little bit rough around the edges that I took to mean like they were much more interested about moving quickly than getting it right the first time. And you saw iterative changes as it was happening, right?
I mean, again, it's not like we had a week that we had set up in a warehouse in Cleveland before the convention where we did a week's worth of coverage to kind of work out the kinks.
Yeah.
The first time that everybody saw us on Monday morning for the RNC was the first time. I mean, hell, here's how it worked. I was on a red eye from San Francisco to Cleveland. I landed in Cleveland. I met everybody for the first time ever and then came back to where I was staying in Cleveland to do the Weird Things podcast 2 weeks ago. And then from there, everything you saw past that was the first time that we were doing it, you know, and then sequentially afterward. So what I had to do in my mind, my goal was that, you know, let's, you know, be the standout on this, or at the very least, be somebody that doesn't look lost. You know, I in a lot of ways, I kind of felt like this was, you know, me trying to sort of validate that what we do is, you know, we like to joke around that we're just horsing off around in front of a webcam, but it is its own kind of broadcast language. It is its own kind of broadcast medium. And what I wanted to do was try to make that, you know, show to everybody else that like, hey, look, there's other people that have done television, and I worked a lot with Michael Shore, who you know, was a host on Current TV and Al Jazeera, for which the jokes are aplenty. You know, currently works with the Young Turks a lot. But he's a dude for whom has had not one but two shows built around him as the lead host. And, you know, my goal was, when me and Michael are on camera together, I want it to be that there are two people who belong on camera together, and he's going to do his television thing, and I'm going to do my internet thing, and hopefully we will have an interesting show because of it. And that was you know, just me trying to understand the lay of the land and lay out good, achievable goals that we could work toward.
So was there a I assume all those discussions about the unique, I guess, I don't know, zany vibe you were going to bring, like, they knew that you're going to bring color to the coverage, right?
You know, I think they knew. I don't know if they knew exactly to the point that
there's a difference between knowing and being prepared. Is that
all right? So when I suggested that we walk around the floor of the Republican National Convention in a Charmander suit, everybody laughed and thought it was a funny idea. What they didn't expect was that I had a Charmander suit packed with me. And I think that was probably the biggest thing that was the difference, was that, you know, I am somebody that very obviously, if you've listened to the politics show, wanted to, you know, I love the fun elements of politics where you can get them. And I think that was a fun way to do it. But I take that far more seriously than I think that they had initially thought.
There's a lot of lessons to bear. And one of the things I appreciate is that you've always had this willingness to just sort of just jump right into things. And I've had some of the best things that happened in my life have when I've showed up and things have been disorganized, instead of sitting around going, well, great, this sucks, is going, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? And when they don't know, figure something out. And it might be something as simple as like, oh, everybody's going to want to eat in 30 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and order some pizzas and take care of it. So we'll have these things here, you know? And when you're the person that jumps in and starts putting, not bossing people around, but like, you know, I was at a party a week ago at a friend's house, nice big party in a mansion. And I noticed it was, you know, later in the night, I started picking stuff up. I started cleaning up the tables and stuff because I didn't know if they had to clean up or if they had a staff to clean up. But I'm like, you know what? Let me put a little bit of order here. And, you know, by and large, those little things, they just help you reputationally. You know, they also make you look like the person people want to go to get things done, because even if it's the small stuff.
Well, and what's beautiful about that is that that's a superpower everybody can have and use at any time, is just do a thing. If you begin that kind of task saying, I am okay with it if somebody comes up and says, hey, man, you don't need to clean up. I'd really prefer if we didn't. I already hired a service. It's going to be fine.
Which is then, what happened.
That's great. But likewise, we're getting ready to go to a convention, and we got a guy who is just good at this kind of stuff. And he knows what problems need to be solved. And so, but he didn't call and say, hey, when it comes to laying stuff out on the table, you need to be thinking about this, that, and the other thing. Instead, he just texted us a picture of all the stuff we're going to have at the convention in shadow boxes laid out with mocked up little price tags on there. And all of a sudden he didn't have to explain to us all the things to do and then make that our job and then hassle us to follow up. He just did it. And the worst case would be that we'd say, oh, well, that's not really what we had in mind. But instead I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, no, this is perfect. Solved. And all of a sudden, like, I will never go to a convention without tapping this guy again.
Yeah, that's being proactive, and it fits back into too, is that, you know, we've all had opportunities come our way because people have seen the things that we've done. And it doesn't happen right away. It doesn't happen immediately when you want it to happen. You know, you sometimes start doing something like, all right, world, all right, ready? Yeah, yeah. And then crickets, nothing but crickets. And we've talked about this before. It's when you stop paying attention and just keep doing it when other people start to notice. And Justin has been super serious about podcasting for years. He's put a lot of thought and consideration into how does he approach politics? How does he take this thing he's passionate of that all of a sudden can be very divisive and not make it divisive. And I think he succeeded at that. And behind the scenes, I know that, you know, there have been a number of opportunities that have come Justin's way because people have seen this and seen his talent and have tried to figure out different ways that they could plug him into things. And, you know, for him, it's a matter of choice of what suits him the most, too, is that, you know, the first big opportunity that comes your way, you know, before you have those opportunities may sound like, oh, my God, this is the thing I got to do. But then you come to a point where like, I need to weigh this. I need to weigh this because I don't want to commit my next 5 years of my life to something that's not quite what I want to do, even though it's bigger than anything I've ever done.
Yeah, you know, part of it is also just having your own sense of you know, not even necessarily every goal ever in your life, but just, you know, a general North Star of where you want to move to. And the best thing about what Brian was saying earlier about just going out and doing stuff is the more stuff you do, the better that, the clearer that picture becomes, you know? There is at least, at the very least, you are going to learn what you like to do and what you don't like to do. And you will learn what you're good at and what you're not good at and where you can put a little bit of effort and make it pay off a ton. But, you know, the biggest thing is what Andrew was saying earlier, that, man, you can walk into something that's messy. And listen, the BitTorrent experience certainly wasn't messy. It was actually a lot of really high-functioning people trying to do something very, very big with a limited amount of time and space. But you can look at that, and especially if you're on a gig thing and it's like you're just going to be out in 2 weeks or a week anyway, you can just kind of say, meh, whatever, man. I'll just wait for someone to tell me what to do. And otherwise, I'm going to be sitting here picking my belly button. Or you can, you know, invest your time, invest your effort, invest something to make it better, make it cooler and more. Like, be selfish about it. Make it more of what you want it to be. Make it more about what suits you, what makes you look good. And if there's going to be a power vacuum, then move on in and just, you know, do your best with it.
Well, and because then at that point, like, just know that whatever it is you do will not be what somebody pictured when they pictured the perfect version of it, but it will be something that exists versus something that there's a gap of problems between where they are now and where they want to be with the finished product. So then it's like, no, I would not have picked, you know, this type of frame or this kind of framework, or, you know, I didn't, you know, I personally am more a Robotron guy instead of Robotech instead of Pokemon. Or whatever, but yeah. The difference is like, but we can adjust things with what we have. Have something instead of nothing. In other words,
And it will amaze you how much you are able to do when you are the one who's suggesting that you yourself does the work. You know,
yeah,
like the more this can be. Hey, what if I do X, Y, and Z, and then you delegate the fifth hardest job to somebody that could probably do the second best job or the first best job, then you will be amazed not only how well that will go if you put your time and effort into it, but how easier the second, the third, the fourth different projects, different things that you want to do are, you know. And that's really, especially in a group where you're just trying to gain trust and respect, it is all those little things. It's like the old story that, you know, if you're a PA on any kind of set, then you should always be at least jogging. You know, it's a little thing, but man, is it is all the joggers that become the people who really run the set, and all the walkers that say that they one time had that PA job.
Yes, that's a really great way to put it. And not that you need to create an ostentatious display of pretending like you're working hard, but I mean, you should be doing things and working hard and figuring out what needs to be done.
One of my favorite stories is, he's a person who we've all sort of been impacted by his life, but it's not a story that's been as told as many often as it should have been, and that's Henri Dunant. And he was a Swiss businessman who traveled around quite extensively. In 1859, he showed up in Italy during the middle of the Battle of Solferino, and it was a very, very deadly battle. There were 23,000 wounded that were laying across the battlefield, and there was nothing being done to take care of them, right? And this is a guy that was very good at organizing people, very successful, you know, very, very successful in some dimensions in business and what have you. And he looked at this and he saw this human tragedy there, and he gathered as many of the women and girls he could from the town, gathered up materials, bought stuff himself, and they went out to the battlefield, and both sides started applying medical attention to them, trying to help the wounded, because neither army really took care of their own wounded, let alone the enemy combatants. And he and these people started taking care of everybody there. And that was the birth of the Red Cross. Is he saw this niche that needed to be filled. He saw this humongous humanitarian problem that needed to be taken care of, and that began there. And then in America, we had Clara Barton with the American Red Cross, and you had people who stepped in and said, if nobody else is going to take care of this, I'm going to do this.
Is this the same? I was Googling as you were saying it, because I was convinced you were talking about the famous message to Garcia. Is that the story you're talking about right now?
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, this is great. If you just type in a message to Garcia, it was an essay written.
I texted Danny before. It's fine. You need.
it's an essay written by Elbert Hubbard in 1899, the point of which is that somebody said, we got to get a message to Garcia, and nobody did. He handed a letter. Guy didn't know who Garcia was, didn't know where he was. Didn't know what the message was about, but was just like, yeah, all right, I'll get it there. You know, and it's like your job is, you know, somebody says, get this message to Garcia, you do what it takes to do it. It's a fantastic essay. In fact, that'll be my pick. Everybody take a moment. It's only like a 2-page essay, but read Message to Garcia. Just Google that.
Excellent. All right, gentlemen, let's jump into picks. Brian did his pick. Unless you have another.
I do have another, actually. My pick was going to be, I'm only halfway through it, but, you know, we've talked about what a boost you can get out of certain motivational speakers. And I certainly, especially early on, quit my day job, you know, relied very heavily on audio programs that, you know, encouraged you to set goals and to make stuff happen. And you can get a great temporary, very effective boost, which is why I found it so interesting that Netflix did an original called, it's about just a Tony Robbins performance called I Am Not Your Guru. Did you guys watch this?
Not yet. Not yet.
It's fascinating because I just went into it assuming that it was going to be basically like an infomercial for the transformative power of his sessions or whatever. But instead, Tony Robbins is cursing like a sailor.
Right from the beginning. Oh, yeah, he does that in his talks.
Well, and you could tell that that's a deliberate machination that he's doing. He's you know, using transgressive language because it's been proven that, like, that's a heuristic people rely on to think, oh, I must be friends with this guy because I only hear that kind of language from my friends.
Yeah, it was a Werner Erhard thing for Est.
Wait, was that English? What did you just say?
Werner Erhard, he started Est, which became Landmark Forum, which was one of the biggest self-help movements in the 1970s. He was one of the big pioneers. There, he was one of the most prolific people to use the drop the F-bombs and all that, you know, when he's doing this group therapy.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. Anyway, I'm halfway through it, and there's brief moments when, you know, it looks like he's working magic, and other brief moments he just looks like a bully shouting at people on stage. And you know, this is somebody, you know, I've gone through, you know, I've listened and read to, you know, half dozen of his programs, and there are things that I like and things I don't like, but this is a very interesting collage of moments from the thing. Certainly worth watching, I think.
Yeah, I'm curious to check it out. He's Tony Robbins is a fascinating character study, and, you know, and I know that, like, coming from like the skeptics world, he always sort of baffled skeptics because on many marks he had this sort of charismatic guru sort of personality, but he was never a guy that tried to build this personal cult. He was a guy that wanted to build a brand. Some of his nutritional stuff is just outright BS. But people would sometimes take his firewalk out of context, where he's not really saying that you're not really doing magic when you walk the fire. And apparently, in when this came out, yet another firewalk expo where people got burned.
Yeah.
But he's a very interesting person. I know a lot of very, you know, rational people that have been very influenced by him. And I've read some of his stuff, and I think there's good dollops of wisdom in there. And I think there in some stuff that's sketchy. You have to take it as you go. But he is a very interesting figure. And interesting is the director of this is Joe Berlinger, who you may remember did the sequel to the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, wow. No,
he
I did not.
He also did a documentary like about some horrific like child murder case or whatever. And I think I met his parents in South Florida at one point. which was Paradise Lost. That's what he did before The Book of Shadows. But anyhow, so interesting, you know, guy who's had some interesting documentary stuff and theatrical work doing it, and a fascinating topic for Netflix to do that. So I do. It's one to say it's on my list that I do want to see this. You know, his son, you know, Tony Robbins' son is a motivational speaker too.
Oh wow, yeah, I don't believe it. That's the kind of you could set up a dynasty like that.
Yeah. So very curious.
One note, of course, in many ways, a Tony Robbins to a new generation. DJ Khaled, who has a very influential and motivational Snapchat wherein he reveals his major keys to success, did an interview with Tony Robbins in which this exchange happened. Tony, one of my keys to success is a lot of pillows. I feel like a lot of pillows is important to relax each piece of your body. Every time you turn, you respect your greatness. Do you have a lot of pillows? To which Tony Robbins said, we have 20 kinds. We get on a plane and we take pillows. I'm with you. The key to success is having great pillows surrounding you.
That is amazing. When did that happen?
That was just this week, I think.
I have many, many multiples of pillows in my bedroom. I'm a big, big, you can never have too many pillows.
I feel like I'm underutilizing my pillow situation. This key to more success has been.
I get to a hotel. I'm like, bring me more pillows. Bring me more pillows.
Yeah, no, they're usually – all right. That's good. All right. Well, listen, another one. Again, because media-wise, I've been a pauper lately. Go ahead and – if you travel more than twice a year, all right? I know it's fun. I like to poke fun at my ridiculous like the mile status stuff or whatever. This is something you can get no matter what. You go to Global Entry, the Global Entry Program. It's the U.S. Border Customs and Borders Protection. You apply. You get an interview. It's a bit of a pain in the ass to get it.
It's a giant pain in the ass, and I've given up on even getting through it because I tried to change my date. You have to book 3 months in advance to get an appointment, and then you can't change it, and then they
yes, you can change it. I changed mine twice.
If you know your password, but if you have to have a one-off password and your freaking LastPass has 12 different variations on it, and then it's you try in the third one, and it says, yeah, you get it wrong too much. And then it kicks you out, and then you have to request a new password, but it takes an hour for it to happen. It's a bit of a pain in the ass.
Okay. So it's a bit of a pain in the
ass. I have not successfully pulled it off, and I, more than just than most of the people listening, have a strong incentive to do this, and I still have not managed to. I've wasted days, literal days.
Do you have pre-check?
No, I did, but then I found out that Now that I'm flying mainly on miles these days, apparently when you are a frequent flyer, the airlines will oftentimes just quietly pay to put you in pre-check to encourage you to keep on flying. But then when you start flying on miles, they're less interested in making sure you get pre-check on there. So now it's kind of a random crapshoot.
Well, the good news is should you traverse the moat and the dragon and the LastPass password generator, what you get is for a very mild $100, 5 years of a known passenger ID number, meaning you always get pre-check no matter what airline you're flying on, meaning you also can go through customs at a kiosk. You just like scan your thumb. They take a picture of you. You do all the things that they would normally ask you in the big gigantic line, and then you can walk right through. It is, they just expanded it apparently that now you can also have the same privileges going in and out of the UK. And having talked to a bunch of traveling press people over the past 2 weeks, there was much of me extolling the benefits of Global Entry. Again, I everything that Brian says is absolutely true. Like, it is a pain to do it. And I had to move my appointment I think twice actually, because, you know, who plans 3 months ahead of time?
Yeah, my confusion was just like I did pre-check and then I was trying to like global entry. I'm like, well, that's going like international. I don't do as much as that as I used to.
Well, the difference is you get guaranteed pre-check. Even if you subscribe to the pre-check program, most of the time it won't be a problem. But when you have global entry, all of the time you get pre-check.
Yeah. So I guess my question is like global entry also helps you with domestic because like I fly.
Yes.
Okay, that was my question. That was not clear. Because I fly like Spirit a lot, and they don't pay for pre-check.
Yeah.
So it.
Yeah.
But global entry, I could go through.
Yep. Yep.
Global entry, yeah. You get, because basically you just get, the government is recognizing you as a person.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll look into that. That was not clear to me, because I am dumb.
So basically, yeah. But when you book, there'll be like known passenger ID, like along with your name and address and everything. As long as you put that in, you're good to go.
Cool. So I have a pick and kind of a little bit of a hack.
Ooh. Right on. I'm a fan
Lately, I've been getting to this sort of this kick of listening to stuff that's written, like, you know, generally speaking, 100 years ago or more. And it started by getting into some H.G. Wells, you know, I listened to the original War of the Worlds, which I enjoy. I'm not a guy that's like, I'm not a big lit guy. I'm not a big, like, you know, I prefer the original. I'm not that guy. I like fast paced. I like stuff like that. But I said, you know, I want to sort of listen to some different things from different eras just sort of to understand the genesis of different sort of, you know, kinds of storytelling. And then I thought I'd get into some Conan Doyle and not his Sherlock Holmes stuff, but his other stuff like The Lost World, right? The Professor Challenger story. And I discovered something when I was like, I'm looking on Amazon and like, you'll find that a lot of stuff that's fallen into public domain. There'll be like 9 billion versions of it. You don't quite know which one to get. And then you're like, man, do I want to pay $10 or $15 for this or whatever? But sometimes they say, hey, you know, buy the Kindle book and then get this version cheaper. But then I found something interesting is that for a number of these books, particularly stuff like that, like let's say The Lost World, if you go look at that up on
Project
Audible Denver right now to see what it costs to purchase, let's see, you'll see that, you know, you could get for like, you know, you could spend your credit and you could buy it like the unabridged version for like $9.80 or whatever. Okay. But if you go look up The Lost World on Amazon and you find the Kindle version, which might be 99 cents or free, okay. So I'm looking at this one with sort of this generic sort of book cover for it. You click on it, and for me, because I'm an Amazon Prime member, it's the Kindle price is free, and then there's a little thing below. It says, buy with one click. Below that, it says, add audible narration to your purchase for just $2.99.
Whoa.
So for $3, I bought the full audiobook of Lost World, which now pops up on my Audible, pops up on Alexa, and I go to bed at night. I say, read me The Lost World. So I've been finding that a number of those titles, if you go through Amazon first and you look for the Kindle versions, you can find them for like $3 or 99 cents or what have you. And that's a great name for a Kindle, by the way. You can so find these sort of deals. So right now I just started listening to King Solomon's Mines, which is considered like the first, you know, the archetypal Lost World sort of story. It was about the Allan Quatermain stories. This is a book written in like 1888 or something to that effect. And I found that, get this, this is like a 10-hour audiobook and you can get it for free, get the ebook for free. And then for 99 cents, you can get the Audible version.
That's awesome.
So that's a little Henry Rider Hazard. So that's a way that you can get some really cheap full length, like 10-hour long Audible books for like $1, $2, $3 via Audible. If you have an Amazon account and an Audible account, go to Amazon first, look up the Kindle versions, and you'll often see add the Audible narration for very cheap, and often the Kindle thing will be for free. So my pick is The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle.
That is awesome. In fact, I kind of feel like I might, I don't know, I'm going to poke around on that, but I kind of feel like I might in as I find myself Scrooge McDuck like awash in Audible credits that tend to stack up a little bit, that maybe this might be giving the Audible subscription a rest for a little bit.
Yeah, they pile up when you don't have a lot of time, and then you burn through them, and so
that's frustrating.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what do I do with my HBO subscription because right now it's
there ain't no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.